In the sprawling landscape of epic fantasy, few works command the reverence that Steven Erikson's Malazan Book of the Fallen series has earned. Deadhouse Gates, the second installment, stands as perhaps the most emotionally devastating fantasy novel ever written. Published in 2000, this book catapulted Erikson from respected author to legendary status in the genre. Stephen R. Donaldson advised readers to treat yourself to Erikson's work, while Glenn Cruck stood slack-jawed in awe of the series. The book's unflinching portrayal of war, particularly the now iconic Chain of Dogs sequence, has left countless readers emotionally shattered, with many reporting having to set the book down to process their grief. Erikson's background as an archaeologist and anthropologist infuses his world with a depth and authenticity rarely seen in fantasy, creating what Salon.com called a master of lost and forgotten epochs, a weaver of ancient epics. The continent of Seven Cities seethes with discontent under Malazan rule, its ancient cultures chafing against imperial control. As the Book of Dryzhna, the sacred text prophesying apocalypse, makes its way to the rebel leader Shaik, the entire subcontinent transforms into a powder keg of mounting tension. The prophecy speaks of a time when the desert goddess will rise again, bringing with her a storm that will scour the land of foreign influence. This prophecy resonates deeply with the native peoples, who have preserved their traditions in secret during decades of occupation. We follow several groups of characters across this volatile landscape, including Fiddler and Callum, veteran soldiers of the elite bridge burners who have left their military company with layered motivations. Their ostensible mission, escorting Apsalar, a young woman previously possessed by Cotillon, the god of assassins, back to her homeland, masks a deadlier purpose. Callum, once an assassin from Seven Cities himself, intends to kill Empress Lassine for her betrayal of the bridge burners at Pale and her systematic elimination of the old guard. Their journey takes them through treacherous territories where ancient wards and forgotten magic still linger. The holy desert Raraku stands as the spiritual heart of Seven Cities, a vast wasteland that was once an ocean floor, where time itself behaves strangely and memories of past ages surface like ghosts in the shifting sands. This mystical desert serves as a convergence point for numerous supernatural forces. Soul-taken and divers, powerful shapeshifters who can transform into single creatures or many, respectively, gather here seeking the Path of Hands, a mysterious magical pathway promising ascendancy to godhood. Their presence adds another layer of chaos to an already unstable region, as these beings often clash violently, leaving destruction in their wake. The awakening of the whirlwind goddess Dryzhna manifests as a colossal magical storm that builds in intensity and size, becoming both a literal and metaphorical force driving the rebellion. The storm carries with it fragments of ancient memories and power, stirring up not just sand, but centuries of buried history and resentment. Local shamans and holy men interpret its signs, feeding the growing fervor for rebellion. Erikson crafts a rich tapestry of cultural complexity within Seven Cities. The various tribes, including the horse-riding Wiccans, the proud Kundril, the mystical Simp, and the warrior Tithonsi, maintain distinct traditions, religious practices, and social hierarchies. Each group has its own history of resistance or accommodation with the Empire, creating a web of shifting alliances and ancient vendettas. The Malazan occupation has forced these traditionally independent peoples into an uneasy coexistence, with some tribes serving as imperial auxiliaries while others maintain a fierce independence. When the rebellion finally erupts, it does so with shocking brutality. Centuries of suppressed resentment explode into violence against anyone associated with the Empire. Soldiers, merchants, and even children of mixed heritage become targets. The uprising, known as the Whirlwind, spreads across Seven Cities with the speed and destructive force of its namesake, transforming civilized cities into battlegrounds and peaceful communities into armed camps. The rebellion reveals not just the fragility of imperial control, but also the deep wounds left by colonization and cultural suppression. Perhaps no storyline in fantasy literature has achieved the emotional resonance of the Chain of Dogs. When the Seven Cities Rebellion, known as the Whirlwind, erupts across the continent, Fist Coltane of the Wiccan tribe is tasked with escorting 30,000 Malazan refugees across hundreds of leagues of hostile desert territory to the safety of Arryn. Imperial historian Duker chronicles this desperate march, becoming our primary witness to both extraordinary heroism and unspeakable horror. His methodical observations providing the human lens through which readers experience this harrowing journey. Coltane's tactical brilliance shines through increasingly desperate circumstances, demonstrating why he earned his reputation as one of the Empire's finest commanders. With severely limited resources and dwindling supplies, he repeatedly outmaneuvers numerically superior forces led by the powerful sorcerer Camist Rollo and the treacherous X-Fist Corbelo Dom. At Vathar Crossing, Coltane's engineers construct an ingenious submerged stone road, luring enemy forces into a devastating trap of buried munitions and alchemical explosives. When ancient desert spirits threaten his people, the young Wiccan warlocks Nil and Nether make the ultimate sacrifice, ritually slaughtering their own warhorses to bind these terrifying powers to their service, an act that haunts them throughout the journey. The cost of survival grows steeper with each passing league across the burning Raraku Desert. Children succumb to thirst and exhaustion. Veteran soldiers willingly sacrifice themselves in desperate rearguard actions. And the refugees themselves become hardened by witnessing countless atrocities. Duker's historian's eye captures every detail with unflinching clarity, from the selfish demands of noble-born refugees to the quiet heroism of common soldiers like Balt and List. When Captain Lull asks him how people endure such sustained horror, Duker can only offer sleight of hand. The small moments of humanity, shared meals, dark jokes, and simple kindnesses that allow them to continue putting one foot in front of another. The Chain of Dogs transforms from a military campaign into a testament to human endurance and sacrifice. The Seventh Army and Wiccan warriors develop fierce loyalty to Coltane, their commitment deepening with each impossible victory and narrow escape. Even enemy tribes like the Kundral ultimately recognize the extraordinary courage of the Wiccans, offering silent tribute as they pass. When they finally reach within sight of Arryn's walls, the refugees are saved. But in one of fantasy literature's most gut-wrenching scenes, Coltane and his remaining soldiers are betrayed by political machinations within Arryn itself. They are surrounded and crucified within view of the city walls, while High Fist Pormqual refuses to send aid, leaving them to die in sight of salvation. This moment becomes a defining tragedy in the series, remembered in songs and tales across the Empire as both a testament to heroism and a damning indictment of political cowardice. Few character arcs in fantasy are as brutal as Felicin Paran's transformation. When her sister Tavor becomes adjunct to the Empress, she condemns her own family to the Odotaro mines as a demonstration of loyalty. We first meet Felicin as she stripped of her noble status, chained, and marched through unto Stmeets while a bloodthirsty mob attacks the prisoners. Protected by the mysterious convict Baden and the ex-priest Heberic Lighttouch, she survives the journey to the mines of Skullcup. Felicin's response to trauma becomes a harrowing study in survival psychology. Rather than resist her degradation, she embraces it, using her body as currency and dulling her pain with the narcotic Durhang. Survival is simply a matter of turning pain into pleasure, she tells herself, constructing emotional armor through calculated self-destruction. She forms a relationship with Benneth, a mind boss who protects her while exploiting her. And she manipulates those around her with cruel efficiency. After escaping the mines through an underwater passage, Felicin, Heborik, and Baden journey across the Odotaro Desert, encountering strange jade fingers of impossible size buried in the sand, remnants of some ancient alien power. Their desperate trek leads them to the coast, where they encounter the mage Culp and his companions aboard a strange vessel. Through a series of mystical catastrophes, they're eventually separated, with Felicin and Hiborik finding themselves in Raraku. Here, Felicin's journey takes its most dramatic turn. She discovers the body of Shaik, the prophesied leader of the rebellion, killed by a crossbow bolt. In a moment of profound choice, Felicin allows herself to be reborn as Shaik, accepting the power of the Whirlwind Goddess while maintaining her own identity and motivations. This transformation isn't possession, but partnership, a calculated decision by a young woman who has learned to weaponize her own suffering. As she raises her arms to summon a massive column of golden dust that spirals skyward, Felicin completes her metamorphosis from discarded noble to apocalyptic leader, promising vengeance against the sister who abandoned her. Among the most compelling relationships in Deadhouse Gates is that between Mappo Runt and Icarium, a pairing that exemplifies the novel's exploration of friendship, duty, and the weight of immortality. Mappo, a massive Trell warrior known for both his physical prowess and philosophical nature, serves as guardian to Icarium, a Jog half-blood whose existence spans countless millennia. Icarium's perpetual amnesia, a curse that wipes clean his memory after each violent episode, creates a haunting cycle of rediscovery and loss that has persisted for thousands of years. Their friendship appears genuine and deep, marked by shared intellectual curiosity and mutual respect, but harbors a devastating secret at its core. Icarium possesses a berserker rage that, once unleashed, can destroy entire civilizations. His power is so immense that ancient ruins across multiple continents bear witness to his destructive potential. Entire cities reduced to rubble, civilizations erased from history, and landscapes permanently altered by his fury. Yet afterward, he remembers nothing, walking away from each catastrophe with the innocent wonder of a newborn. Mappo's guardianship was arranged by the mysterious Nameless Ones, an ancient organization that has assigned companions to Icarium for thousands of years. These guardians are carefully chosen for their combat abilities, wisdom, and capacity for compassion, all necessary traits for containing and directing Icarium's destructive potential. Each day, Mappo lives with the crushing guilt of his deception, genuinely loving his friend while maintaining an elaborate web of lies. Their conversations often turn to history and philosophy, with Mappo carefully steering clear of topics that might trigger Icarium's memories. When Icarium discovers ancient mechanisms he himself built 94,000 years earlier, including sophisticated timepieces and complex astronomical devices, Mappo must delicately balance truth and deception to prevent his friend from piecing together his own tragic history. Their journey through the holy desert of Raraku brings them to the temple of Iskaral Pust, the eccentric high priest of shadow whose apparent madness masks deep cunning. Pust's constant babbling and obsessive sweeping, along with his ongoing war against the temple's mischievous Bokarala monkey inhabitants, initially appears as mere comedy. However, his seemingly random actions reveal themselves as carefully orchestrated manipulations serving the complex schemes of Shadow Throne, the god of shadow. When they encounter Fiddler's group, their paths become intertwined in the search for Tremorlore, an Azath house holding secrets crucial to multiple characters' destinies. The Azath houses represent one of Erikson's most fascinating creations, living structures that maintain cosmic balance by imprisoning beings of immense power. These mysterious edifices appear throughout the world, each containing countless chambers holding immortals, gods, and creatures too dangerous to roam free. As Icarium learns of Tremorlore's nature, he makes a heartbreaking decision. He will voluntarily submit to imprisonment to end the danger he represents to the world. This choice, made without knowing the full truth of his condition, devastates Mappo, who must wrestle with whether to finally reveal everything or allow his friend to sacrifice himself based on incomplete understanding. Their story culminates in a profound moment of truth when Mappo finally confesses Icarium's nature and the real purpose of their relationship. Rather than responding with rage or accusation, Icarium shows quiet acceptance and expresses gratitude for Mappo's companionship through the ages. This moment of vulnerability between these ancient, powerful beings provides one of the novel's most poignant emotional cores, a friendship tested by impossible circumstances, yet surviving through genuine love and acceptance. Their relationship ultimately speaks to deeper themes about the nature of identity, the burden of immortality, and the power of compassion in the face of cosmic tragedy. Throughout Deadhouse Gates, supernatural forces converge on Ruraku in what Erickson terms a convergence, when power attracts power, creating a nexus of magical significance. This phenomenon manifests primarily through two parallel events: the Path of Hands, which draws Soul-Taken and Divers, shapeshifters seeking ascension, and the Fragmented Warren at Tremorlore, which attracts those seeking passage through the vast Azath network. These concurrent events transform the desert into a deadly crucible, where ambition and survival become inextricably linked. The shapeshifters represent some of the novel's most terrifying antagonists, each demonstrating unique forms of transformation and hunger. Grillin, a Divers who manifests as thousands of rats, pursues Fiddler's group with relentless determination, his consciousness fractured across countless verminous bodies. Mesrim, a bear Soul-Taken who briefly allies with Mappo, provides insight into the tragic nature of shapeshifters before falling victim to the Azath. Rylandaris, the white jackal, terrorizes entire regions with his pack form. These beings exemplify the novel's theme of transformation, how power changes those who seek it, often destroying their humanity in the process. Many were once human scholars or mages whose pursuit of power led them down paths of irreversible change. The magical systems in Deadhouse Gates demonstrate Erickson's extraordinary world-building through their layered complexity and historical depth. The Warrens, pathways of magical energy accessible to humans, include specialized domains like Denul, healing, Mianus, shadow, and Telus, fire. Beyond these lie the Elder Warrens like Kerald Galain, darkness, and Telen, Tylen Imos, representing primal forces from before human civilization. When characters like Culp or Sormo access these powers, they risk encountering entities far beyond their comprehension, elder gods, demons, and beings from the dawn of time itself. The Warren system reflects the world's deep history, with newer human Warrens built upon the foundations of ancient power. The convergence culminates at Tremorlore, where Fiddler's group battles through waves of desperate shapeshifters to reach the Azath house. Inside, they discover a bizarre interior where imprisoned beings are held within living roots, some of the most dangerous entities in existence trapped for millennia. The house contains a portal leading to the Warren of the Azath itself, a realm connecting every Azath house across countless worlds. This network allows them to travel instantly from Ruraku to Malaz City, demonstrating the vast scale of Erickson's cosmology, where entire continents can be bypassed through these mystical connections. The Azath houses serve as both prisons and waypoints, maintaining a delicate balance in the world's magical ecology. The novel's treatment of divinity adds another layer of complexity to this magical landscape. Gods like Shadowthrone, Cotillon, and Drygena interact directly with mortals, while ascendants, beings approaching godhood, walk among humans with their own agendas. Shadow priests channel divine power, while mages tap into warrens that were once the domains of gods. The line between mortal and divine blurs throughout the narrative, suggesting that godhood itself is simply another form of transformation, with all its attendant costs and compromises. Even the gods themselves are shown to be fallible, bound by rules and limitations they cannot break, making them more complex characters rather than omnipotent beings. Against the backdrop of rebellion and supernatural convergences, Deadhouse Gates weaves an intricate political thriller centered on Colum's assassination mission. The former bridge burner and ex-claw embarks on a treacherous journey across seven cities, carrying the sacred Book of Drygena to Shaik, a mission that conceals his true intent to ultimately undermine the rebellion by assassinating Empress Lysine. This dual purpose exemplifies the layered deceptions that characterize the Malazan Empire's political landscape. Colum's journey becomes a lens through which we witness the Empire's complex socio-political tapestry. His encounter with Captain Kenib and his traumatized family, survivors of a company betrayed by Corbulo Dom's renegade Malazans, illustrates the cascading effects of imperial politics. Through their experiences, we see how military betrayals ripple outward, destroying not just soldiers, but entire family units. The betrayal by Dom's forces shows how the rebellion fragments loyalties, turning Malazan against Malazan, commander against soldier, neighbor against neighbor. The human cost of imperial machinations becomes painfully clear through multiple encounters. Refugee camps overflow with displaced civilians, local militias exploit power vacuums, and once proud military units descend into banditry. Each interaction reveals how imperial policies created a web of competing interests, merchant houses vying for trade routes, religious factions seeking influence, and military commanders pursuing personal ambitions. The novel's final act transforms Malaz City into a shadowy battleground where Colum confronts the deadly efficiency of the Claw assassination squads. The city's narrow alleys and rooftops become a lethal maze as hands of Claws emerge from the Imperial Warren, hunting their former colleague. Erickson masterfully choreographs these encounters, showing how Colum's intimate knowledge of Claw tactics allows him to turn their own methods against them. Each confrontation demonstrates different aspects of the assassin's art, from swift ambushes to elaborate traps and psychological warfare. The assassination plot reaches its climax in a revelatory confrontation with what appears to be Empress Lysine, though it's actually a sophisticated magical projection. Her justifications paint a picture of pragmatic ruthlessness. The decimation of the bridge burners was collateral damage in a larger strategy. Dujek's outlying was an elaborate ruse, and the assassination of Emperor Kellenved and Dancer represented a necessary evolution in imperial leadership. This conversation elevates the novel's examination of power beyond simple moral judgments, revealing how even seemingly villainous actions can stem from rational, if ruthless, calculations about empire and survival. The narrative's most stunning revelation comes when Shadow Throne unveils himself as the ascended Emperor Kellenved, exposing his fake death as part of a grand scheme to achieve godhood alongside his companion Dancer, now known as Cotillion. This disclosure fundamentally alters our understanding of the Empire's recent history, suggesting that mortal politics serve as mere pieces in games played by ascendant beings. The political becomes theological as divine ambitions reshape mortal affairs. Colum's final charge, protecting 1,300 orphan children, transforms his arc from an instrument of vengeance to a guardian of innocence, highlighting how personal redemption can emerge from political chaos. As Deadhouse Gates reaches its devastating conclusion, it delivers its most profound statement on the cost of empire and the nature of historical witness. The Chain of Dogs ends in betrayal when High Fist Pormqual, manipulated by the treacherous Gisto priest Malik Rel, orders his 10,000 soldiers to surrender their weapons to Corbulo Dom's forces. What follows is unspeakable. All 10,000 are crucified along Arran Way, creating a three-league line of suffering that becomes known as the Day of Pure Blood. Duker, the imperial historian who has witnessed every moment of the Chain of Dogs, becomes the final victim. As he hangs dying on his cross, he embodies the novel's central question: what is the value of bearing witness to atrocity? Throughout the narrative, Duker has struggled with this role, recording events while questioning whether historical accounting can ever capture the true horror of what he's seen. His crucifixion represents the ultimate silencing of historical truth. The Empire cannot face the reality of its own failures. Yet even in this bleakest moment, Erickson offers a thread of hope. The epilogue shifts to a pregnant Wiccan widow told her child has no soul. As she prepares to drink poison, a massive flock of crows appears, the same crows that carried away Coltane's body after his execution. The horsewife falls to her knees in recognition, and the unborn child stirs for the first time. Without explicitly stating it, Erickson suggests Coltane's soul has found new life, that even after unimaginable destruction, renewal remains possible. This tension between despair and hope defines Deadhouse Gates. The novel never flinches from showing the worst of humanity, betrayal, torture, genocide, yet consistently finds moments of transcendent courage and compassion. When a soldier named Squint weeps while mercy-killing the crucified Coltane with an arrow, or when Mappo confesses his deception to Icarium, or when Fiddler chooses to re-enlist despite everything he suffered, we see humanity's capacity for moral choice even in the darkest circumstances. The novel leaves us with questions rather than answers. What makes empires rise and fall? Can civilization exist without exploitation? How do we bear witness to suffering without being destroyed by it? Through its interweaving narratives of soldiers, refugees, assassins, and gods, Deadhouse Gates suggests that history is not a straight line, but a complex tapestry where individual choices matter even against the vast backdrop of imperial ambition and divine manipulation. In Erickson's world, as in our own, the struggle for compassion and meaning continues even as empires crumble to dust.